Are you seeking more creativity in your life? Join us, Nadia and me, Laura, the hosts of the Creative Rumble podcast.
Each week, we delve into the minds of inspirational creatives, share their wisdom and our own creative journeys. We explore how to align yourself, develop creative ideas, and find inspiration.
Join us as we explore what it takes to live a creative life so you too can feel the creative rumble.
Living a creative life is for everyone. Let's Creative Rumble.
The Creative Rumble podcast acknowledges the traditional custodians of this country and recognise Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' continuing connection to land, sea, waterways, sky and culture. We pay respects to elders, past, present and emerging. Hi, Creative Rumblers. This episode was recorded on one of our Creative Rumble road tours on the east coast of Tasmania in October last year. Nadia Aliff Robinson and myself, Laura Purcell, went to Swansea and interviewed head winemaker Jackie Dolan at Milton Vineyard. And we tried the Milton Sparkling Rosé and the Gewurz Traminer. And we were sitting in the dining area overlooking the vineyard, which has a large dam, like a beautiful dam or lake, with the afternoon sun beating down on the leafy vines on a cloudless day. It was beautiful. After the interview, Jackie took us on a tour of the winery so we could actually see where the sparkling was bottled, and we then jumped into Jackie's ute for a tour of the vineyard, and we took pictures of Jackie afterwards in the vineyard. She was marvellous, a marvellous model. And it was just such a great visit and meeting Jackie. She's wonderful. So I wanted to share a little bit more about Jackie before we launch in. So Jackie Dolan is the head winemaker at Milton Vineyard on Tasmania's east coast. Born and raised in Tassie, her love of wine started early, thanks to parents who took her on countless wine tours and jokingly predicted her future in winemaking. A school project on Marilla Estate at just 11 years old turned out to be a sign of things to come. Since 2009, Jackie has built her career in Tasmania's wine industry, starting in vineyard management before stepping into winemaking. She honed her craft at Derwent Estate, Marilla Estate, and Domain A before taking the reins at Milton Vineyard in 2023. Passionate about Tasmania's world-class wines, she specialises in Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, and Gewurz Traminer, with top awards already under her belt. And Jackie is shaping the future of Tasmanian winemaking. In this episode, we talk about the creativity in winemaking. We talk about confidence, travel, and how valuable mentoring is, and hearing more about the mentors Jackie's had in her life. So let's tune in, Rumblers.
We are here in gorgeous sunny Swansea, and we're sitting in the cellar door with Jackie. Laura's looking hot as always, and we have got beautiful view of the vineyards and the gorgeous dam, and this is living a good life. So thank you very much for joining us.
No worries. It's a pretty beautiful place to be.
Yes.
Thanks for coming along.
Oh, thank you. And so
how long have you been here?
I came on board for Vintage 23, so for the new winery build. And before that, the wines were made off-site, and I had a little hand in making them down at Derwent Estate 2018 and 17, yep. I believe.
Yeah.
And then when the winery opened up here, they asked me to come on board, and it was very exciting. So I got to set up a new winery from scratch. I'll have to show you later.
Oh, that's amazing.
Please do. It is very exciting. So like, where did you begin? So like, how did you get to this point?
So I began my journey in the wine industry back in the vineyards. So I worked down at Clemens Hill Vineyard in the Coal Valley, and it sort of just happened because I was studying horticulture and really wanted to do something outdoors. and they advertised a position for a vineyard hand for the pruning season. So I thought I'd try that out and worked there for a pruning season and then was employed full time and ended up there for 5 years. My boss at the time encouraged me to start studying, and so I decided to do viticulture and winemaking. And in the mix, threw in a couple of kids and took about 5.5 years to finish the degree.
Oh, yeah. I know what that's like. Yeah.
It was hard work. Yeah. but we got there in the end. And after that, I went back to hospo for a little bit and worked down at Cape Bernier Vineyard in and around Bream Creek. Beautiful location right next to the old Falls Festival site. And then I was offered a position for a assistant winemaker over at Derwent Estate after that. So I jumped at that opportunity because I sort of dabbled a little bit over vintages, just playing with the grapes coming in and doing odd bits and pieces around my full-time job, and really loved the winemaking side. So as soon as that opportunity came up, I jumped on it and did my first vintage and sort of got thrown in the deep end.
Oh, my God. It's so exciting.
It was awesome.
Yeah.
But vintage is a time where you don't have time to muck around. It just all comes in sometimes hard and fast, and you've just got to learn quickly. So it was probably the best way to do it, really. So I was there for 3 years and then went on to Marilla for 3 years and both assistant winemaker positions, and this is my first gig out on my own.
Wow.
Wow. So how long is that journey? So like a 10-year journey, 7 years?
My first year in the vineyard was 2009.
Okay.
So, yeah, 15 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice. And all in Tassie.
Yeah.
I would have liked to have done a vintage overseas, but it was tricky with kids.
Like kids,
But there's plenty more years ahead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That'll come later.
Yeah.
I'm doing it the wrong way around.
Oh, because a lot of people do go overseas and then come back.
Yeah.
When did you think, when you were studying viticulture, that you just started to really were a bit more interested in the winemaking process as opposed to what was going?
I think, like, I really enjoyed the time out on my own and outside, but I suppose when I started studying, it sort of opened up that door a bit for me. And it wasn't really, it was something that I'd thought about doing in the past but didn't really think it was achievable. And I suppose no one in my family had ever gone through and done a uni degree, so it wasn't really on the radar until someone.
First in family is a big thing too.
And someone sort of pushed me along to, well, my boss at the time pushed me along to do it. So that little nudge just sort of opened up another door, and I just felt like I wanted to be, well, creative. And so winemaking was an opportunity to do that. And I think, it was just when I started my degree, in answer to your question.
Yeah.
And I started learning more and more about winemaking. I got more excited about it.
And you would have known all what was happening in the on the ground, in, you know, with the land, what you're feeding it.
Exactly.
How it was affecting down the track.
Yeah. So I'm really pleased that I started my journey there, because I really understand the fruit from the vines all the way through to the processing bit, and how important it is to get really good fruit before you can make good wine, because you can't easily make good wine with poor quality fruit.
You've got a lot more work to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. So many questions.
So one of the themes that we've found in talking to different people as well is that a lot of the time, and just confidence and life and busyness and everything like that, it's that people have mentors, and you did touch on someone that sort of like had your back and was like, you should just try this, and, you know, it was daunting and things like that. How important was it having a mentor or just someone in your corner? I mean, it's often our partners as well, you know, just saying, yeah, you got to do this. You got to take this chance. You got to,
I think it's super important. To be honest, like, I was sort of self-driven for a long time, and it's only in recent years I've really got the confidence. I'm still working on that. I think it's going to be forever, but that's fine. But it's, I think mainly my mentors have been my friends, close girlfriends, and I've got some really beautiful people in my corner, and that's really helped in recent years to take this step into winemaker position, because I was doubting myself. I was like, can I do it? And I had that, like, imposter syndrome.
Yeah, they were like, of course you can.
And she's like, come on, you can totally do it. Just take the plunge. And my family, I remember it was a big move coming up here. We're from the south, so down in Hobart. And we've got three kids.
Yeah.
And I had to move the whole family to to be up here. And it was never a given that I was going to take the job. It was, you know, it's only if the kids are on board.
Yeah, we'll see how we go. Yeah.
Of course, I really wanted it, but it's always going to be a family decision. And we all sat around the dinner table and I said, hey, what do we think about this? Obviously, my husband already knew, but talking to the kids for the first time. And my teenager at the time, actually, our eldest, I expected her to go, no, I'm not leaving my friends. I'm not moving to the East Coast. That sounds terrible. Yeah. But she actually had the complete opposite reaction. And she said, Mum, is this your dream job?
Aww.
And I said, yes, with tears. And she's, she's like, well, absolutely. Let's do it. And so from that point, I know.
So you, you've got gorgeous kids too.
Yeah.
But from that point, I was just like, okay, I'm not just doing this for me anymore alone.
Yeah.
Not that ever it was, but, you know, it's more than that. And I'm
role modeling, chasing a dream.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. For my kids and for my family. And it's worked out really well. Yeah.
Good.
We gave it a crack and we're still here and we want to be here for a long time.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
That's amazing. That's amazing. That's amazing. And to have the support of your family to be able to do that is you can't really go for a dream if no one's really supporting you. It's really hard.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Exactly. Yeah. So I feel really lucky to have them.
Mm.
And whilst it's been challenging trying to have a full-time career and study with young kids, it's moments like those that make it all worth it.
Yeah. I love that.
Gorgeous.
Yeah. Yeah. So you grew up in Hobart?
Grow up?
Yeah, I did grow up in Hobart. Yeah. Pretty boring, really. I've done a lot of traveling. So I did win a grant to go and study sustainable viticulture when I was working in vineyards.
Really?
Through my uni at the time. So I got a $10,000 grant to go and look at old world methods in France versus our new world methods in Australia.
Oh,
amazing.
No, hence why none is in Provence. Did you go to Provence?
I didn't actually. I stuck to all the, I stuck to Burgundy and Champagne and sort of Loire region, and we stayed with some friends over there. It was a great experience, but I fell pregnant with my second daughter just before we went overseas.
Oh, did you have and really so bad sickness? Like, did you get like?
I mean, like just before being after I got the grant, and then she was 7 weeks old when we took her, and eldest was 3.5 weeks.
Yeah,
so
I've traveled with little babies. I get it, but it's like the mental logistics, let alone whatever you have to do at the other end.
Exactly. Yeah, so I had all these grand plans to make connections over there and visit lots of vineyards. And I did go to a conference over there in Narbonne, in the south, but I was falling asleep in the lectures and feeding her in between. And it was challenging. We were hoping to stay there for at least 6 months up to a year, but we couldn't get we'd have to get sponsored. We couldn't get working holiday visas, even though we were within that.
Yes.
We were under 31.
Right. So young.
But with kids.
With kids.
We couldn't do it. But that's fine. We ended up spending a couple of months over there and lived with some friends just outside of Geneva and had the best time and spent lots of time with the kids and weren't working. So visited some beautiful wine regions.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So
inspired.
What was it like being, I don't know how many women winemakers there are out there and what the industry is particularly like, but going to France and with children in tow and, you know, was that there, did you find there were some barriers there as well or is it just, doesn't matter?
As a female?
Yeah, as a female and as a...
Any breaking,
I think it was just more a barrier, especially if you're travelling in Burgundy, unless you've got... connections over there in the first place. It's really, they're so inundated with tourists that they don't really want to see people outside of, unless they do have a little place for tasting.
Mm.
So actually being able to visit people and make connections is really hard. Doesn't matter your gender. It's just
who you know.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So that was tricky. We did meet with someone in Champagne and I can't remember the name of the vineyard now, but he was amazing and he took us around and we had a look at the vineyard and he talked about his practices and that was really great, but it would have been nice to, if we had a handful of those experiences.
Yeah. And was the language a barrier or?
I'm terrible with languages. So, yeah, probably. Very basic.
Sure,
I sort of leaned on my husband for more of that because he's better. Even though neither of us are very good at it.
Yeah.
He's much better.
What were some real standouts? I mean, and you got to spend time with your friends there as well, but some of the is there anything there that really came across to you, like from a winemaking perspective of what you picked up?
Or like when you come back here, like what you might have done different?
Yeah. I only say that because I got to spend 2 months in Paris in a studio, and I got some good rent to, you know, go and stay in this place and the Cité and I've still got
– You got an art scholarship to do that.
Well, it wasn't a scholarship. I had to pay my own way, but they gave me They gave me a room. I still paid my way, but, you know, just so.
Sounds amazing.
It was really amazing, and it was like 300 other artists in the vicinity in the Cité and right in the Le Marais. But all of the research that I did, I still have that, you know, like I'll continue drawing from that, like that, you know, whether it's an image or a thought or just a feeling or, you know, or I'll, you know, use some hand cream that I was using at the time and I can still buy it and I'll smell it and I'm back in the studio, you know, things like that. Evocative. Yeah. So I'm actually, that's where my question is coming to you from, like that seemed like a really rich time. So is that, you know, there's some little moments pop out for you that you like that,
I remember the moment we were driving through Burgundy for the first time, because there's so much romance around that region and excitement if you haven't been and you're working in the industry. So I remember driving through and looking at the vineyards either side and just going, oh, my God, we're here. And
we've
just the tears came, and I think it was probably a bit of extra emotion because of
breastfeeding hormones. And jet lag.
But that moment that I had that realization, I'm really here and I'm grounded and, yeah, and I just took it in and as much as I could. Yeah. There was a spot in Burgundy where they were tilling up the ground between the vines with a horse and cart. So it was just beautiful. But I was like, I can't really take these methods home. Well, I think what I did get out of it is that you can't really compare the two regions or there's multiple regions over there, but you can't really compare old world with new to some degree because there's so much history there. So, well, when I went, they were still doing methods like that you'd not take on board here because it's just not cost effective.
And
whatever. It's old school. But it was beautiful to see that, you know, people are still working the land like that.
It's really embedded in part of their life and
Daily
life as well.
Yeah. It's multi-generational and I found that really beautiful. But as far as things that I could bring back here, I didn't really talk to enough people to really cross over the two. I probably got more from the conference around sustainable viticulture than
That's cool, though, that it was a sustainable one as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously, you know, that's your ethos as well. Yeah.
Yeah. Try to be.
Yeah.
Which is within, cost-effective frames and efficiency. Yeah. All of those things.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a while ago now. So.
What year was that then? That was.
I think that was in, our middle child is 11 and she was a baby. So, 10 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the world's changed a lot since then too.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
COVID. Yeah.
How'd you go during COVID?
And the
COVID?
Climate as well, yeah.
What was
How'd
that?
How'd you go during COVID?
During, I was lucky in that I could continue to work because primary industries were able to keep working. Mm. And it really hit in March, didn't it? February, March.
That's right. And then they were shutting everything down.
Yeah. So we get fruit coming in around March. So it was perfect really because I was able to forget about all the problems in the world really, continue to work and just focus on that. It was surreal. I was at Mona and there was no customers on site. Usually it's heaving with people and there's so much going on, but it was just a handful of people still working, mostly just our team. and the owners, obviously, live on site, and that was it.
Yeah.
So it was – that side was quite shocking because it really hit home what was going on.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I was luckier than most in that I was able to keep working and distract myself from that horrible time.
Yeah, there's a beauty to it and also a tragedy of that time and a lingering on of how it – just the ripples of it.
I think people were drinking more, that's for sure.
Yeah, oh, so for sure. I was going to say, you're definitely in the wine industry.
I'd gone from like, you know, a 12% Pinot Noir to like a 14-15% Shiraz. I'm cab sav, bring it on.
I loved how a lot of people did get creative with how they were selling their wine, and there was
– oh, like from a marketing perspective.
Yeah. So there was online tastings that you could do, and we jumped on board with that and got some wine sent home. I think it was maybe once a month or so. And then you did a tasting online with the person that was selling.
Oh, like a curated online experience.
Yeah, cool.
So what, there'd be smaller bottles or just regular bottles you'd take or send over or –
I think they sent like a whole six pack, or maybe you could get 6 or 12. I can't remember how exactly it worked. It wasn't smaller bottles, so I think we were probably opening a few, or they were talking about them.
Yeah,
and you could open them, or you could choose to leave them. But you'd probably taste them and drink them over a few days.
Oh yeah,
but danger. Yeah. But it was great.
That's actually really good.
Yeah,
that's a clever idea.
That's really good. How do you manage that? Like I guess it's not your own personal business per se, but you are personally invested, I would imagine, in the,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Your, well, luckily we have a vineyard manager that looks after all that now, but it used to be my responsibility. Unfortunately, it's farming, so you just take the good years with the bad and make the best that you can out of what you've got. Luckily for me here at Milton, we had a really low yielding vintage for vintage 23 when I was trying to figure it all out, which wasn't great for the business, but just made it easier for me. Mm. But the quality was really good as well. And so, you know, there's a little bit of balance between quality and yield. And 24, we just had perfect ripening conditions and good yields again. But we were 40% up on 23, so that's how different it can be.
Oh, so that would have been like logistically huge too, wasn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah, we went from 97 tons to off our site last year. We did 170.
Yeah.
So whoa.
Yeah.
That's a
lot.
That's huge.
A lot of fruit.
It's big, but that's how much things can be affected from year to year. It's just. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But the vineyard is really hard work.
Yeah.
I loved it, and it was physical, and it's great to be out there, but you definitely try and find ways to make things easier. Yeah. And
Yeah, especially if you don't have the right equipment to, you know, or you're just, you know, a lot of was being done by hand at the time, you know, a lot of that, or you just need to have that big team or.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're really lucky we've got all the whiz bang.
Yeah,
and like in the winery,
you know, and we've got a vineyard manager, perfect.
And like, you know, putting the nets on and making sure like it's not getting bird eaten and just
Well, here most of the vineyard isn't covered in nets, and we just sort of rely on gas guns. And obviously, there's some loss, but you sort of take those losses because if you weigh up how much it costs to cover the vineyard in nets. As opposed to losing a little bit of fruit off the edges,
it's
probably not much difference.
That's interesting.
Mm.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I worked at a lychee farm and putting the nets on and climbing up under, up the tree and, you know, and then only to have, this is in North Queensland, flying foxes just land on the top of the nets and like bite through and eat the lychees, and then it just rots down through anyway. Like, what was the point?
The problem here as well is just wind. But you put them on, and then the next minute you get a really big wind. It's Murphy's Law.
So there's no point. There's no point.
And they're all it's not just you put them on once and that's it. This time of year, it's frost protection is. Keeping people up in the middle of the night because there's been quite a few frosts recently.
The tomato, the Hobart You can't plant it before your tomatoes in the garden before show day.
Yeah, that's right. Show day, grow day. Maybe not just tomatoes.
Yeah. I love it.
But yeah, the owner and the vineyard manager have been up in the middle of the night. Luckily, that's not my job.
Yeah.
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 So put the sprinklers on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Get those sprinklers on. Tell me more about, like, did you do any, I know you don't have to be an artist to be a winemaker, but
it's
curation, isn't it? Like, was there something in your childhood or, you know, qualities of you in your younger days that you recognize as, is it organization or is it like that comes together to, you know, flavors or?
To end up here.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's funny you ask that because my parents were really into wine. I don't know whether they were drinking anything too fancy, but, you know, wine was a big part of family life and I was able to taste when I was quite young and that was fine. I'd be dragged around up to the Tamar for wine tasting weekends with my nan and her sister and
oh, bless, you know, I love it.
I'd be given a gobstopper so they'd shut up in the car. So. So just be continually saying, I'm bored.
Oh, yeah.
And trips to South Australia as well. And during that time, my parents decided it would be a really good idea if I became a winemaker to fuel their habits. I think I was only about 12 when they said this to
me. Yeah, my children, if you're listening,
And most people usually most kids would usually resist and do something completely different, but here I am.
And did
it's strange.
Is it just something subliminal that was just planted?
Maybe. We did a trip to Marilla when I was, I think, in year five and I could choose a project for the year. And I'd pressed a leaf and did this project on Marilla and, you know, a grapevine leaf, that is.
Yeah.
And my parents kept that for years and, yeah, and then I ended up working there. So
wow.
It's kind of uncanny in a way.
Yeah, synchronicities.
Yeah, definitely. But I feel like I have just sort of landed here. Just like I've never pushed to really get where I am. And I've always had an interest in wine and enjoyed wine and I suppose studying hospitality as well. Just love the stories around wine and obviously the everything sensory and it's so beautiful to be able to make something that people then enjoy. But there is so much creativity behind that as well. There's lots of science, but it's just a perfect marriage between science and creativity, I think.
That's
the bit that interests me. Like I've just like perfume and like all the different notes and the flavors and everything like that. I mean, even that wine, what was this one that you
the Gewürztraminer.
Yeah. And you were like, it's like slightly tropical. And I smelled it. It's like, it's
super
amazing.
Lychee. Yeah.
Take me back to Queensland. Yeah.
It really is beautiful.
So
nice.
It's really lovely.
But that's amazing to be able to have the skills and the knowledge to be able to curate something like that. Like, it's really cool.
To create something that takes someone on a journey and also something that you can lay down and then in years to come it's always evolving. So I think when I'm making wine.
Like the evolution of like the scents and the flavours and things. Yeah,
you can't really, you can predict to some degree what's going to happen in the bottle, but once you put it in a bottle, that's it. And then you just have to wait and see. You know?
Yeah.
And I actually love that about it.
Yeah.
It's sort of like you're going to get an amazing surprise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, in a way. Like you'd hope that you'd know to some degree what it's going to be like.
Yeah.
But I really love that about it. And I'm constantly questioning myself because I don't have the best confidence. but it's a good thing.
I ask you about that because I go, why?
You're a gun.
Yeah.
It's my favorite rosé. I was like, okay, we're going up the East Coast. Who makes my favorite rosé?
True.
It's you.
This vineyard's been around since the 90s and I've only just started making it in the 90s.
But I've only noticed, more Milton Moore. Like I knew it's been around, but
Yeah.
But there's something going on. Yeah. There's something going on.
You can tell.
I can tell. Yeah. There's a vibe, Jackie. There's a vibe.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Yeah. Bringing me up, see? Yeah. You're going to be my people that bring me up.
Yeah. Absolutely. That's what we're here for. Yeah. Yeah. And I guess, you know, like I go, you know, what the, like, let's talk about confidence because, and is that an industry thing?
Confidence. For me, it's just a journey I've had to go on. I don't know why, but I'm not a big believer in myself a lot of the time, and I really should be. And I'm working on that. And I've done a lot of work on that in the last few years, and it's been a beautiful journey. And I feel like my journey started there, and my 30s were the best years because I really found out about myself and who I am and where I want to be and what I really value. And once I figured that out, I think the rest is easy.
Yeah.
In a way.
Yeah.
It was really hard. It was really hard to get to that point.
Yeah.
And to make the decision to do some work and figure it out. And I'm not fully there, but I've definitely really improved in the last few years. And like I said before, it's got me to where I am now.
Yeah.
I haven't pushed to be here, but somehow.
But there's something's sort of, working.
You open one door and another one opens and it's so true. It just keeps going.
And that seems to be like a common thematic, and our guests have been talking about the synchronicities, but also a door closes and it's like, oh, that didn't work. But, oh, something came up and, you know, suddenly they've moved into a whole new area they didn't think they would, but it's turned out the best for them. So
absolutely. Yeah. And it's so important to make mistakes actually on that.
Oh, like, that's
without making mistakes, you just don't learn. So, but when you're dealing with thousands of dollars worth of wine at a time, you need to make sure that you know how to fix the mistakes. So I think that is what separates a good winemaker with an average one, is that, you know, you need to have the strategies in place. What if this goes wrong?
Sure.
How do I fix it?
Yeah.
Or how do I blend it away and hide it?
Yeah.
You know, things do go wrong. We're all human.
Yeah.
And
But you've done the work, and also, you know, you've worked out, you know, from the agriculture side as well. So you have that appreciation. You've done the different roles, I'm imagining, like within like.
And I've made plenty of mistakes, but I've also asked plenty of questions on the way as well.
Yeah.
Questions is the other one. Just making sure that you're.
Don't be afraid to ask.
I think, don't be afraid to ask, but always ask questions of yourself. Ask, why are you doing this? Don't just do it because someone told you to do it. Mm. I think my, what's the word?
Gut instinct?
Yeah, I suppose gut instinct, but no, more just. The way I do always question what I'm doing because of my slight lack of confidence.
Oh, is this right? Is this right?
Yeah, it's actually been beneficial because it's made me develop strategies to sort of fix something if it goes wrong.
Yeah.
Or like investigate it further because I want to know how it works.
So it's not necessarily like being risk averse, it's actually being smarter because you're like.
It's a bit of both.
Yeah, yeah.
It's definitely being risk averse, but it's working. Yeah, it's working smarter.
Yeah. That's really good though. That's good. You're looking at the whole picture. You're looking at it from all different angles. And I would say that probably is knowing, well, that'd be from where you, just all the experience that you've had from on the land to on the floor to.
I think so. It's definitely helped.
Yeah.
And having good people to ask. And our industry in Tassie is really great in that I have quite a few people who I can call on and say, hey, what do you think about this? And we're all willing to share information. I'm hoping that I'll be able to share that forward, you know, as I grow and get more experience in the industry as well.
Yeah.
But I've got a mate over the road at Springvale, actually, Matt Wood. And when I came up here, it was all quite daunting. And I was like, Matt, how am I doing this? What am I doing?
What have I done?
And he's been amazing. And, he's a good mate but also a great mentor, and I'm very lucky to have him.
That's awesome.
I think it would be really good when you show us around. I'd love to learn more about, what happens in a day or, could you maybe tell us what happens briefly now? What would a day look like for you,
this time of year?
Yeah, so this time of year.
So the vines are just starting to grow again now.
And so the guys in the vineyard have been really busy with pruning, and that's all done now. So we're just sort of eventually over the next few weeks we'll have to do a bit of canopy management and lift the wires and get them all trained up right. But in the winery at the moment we're pulling the Pinots out of barrel and blending them up and sulfuring them up because I've left mine unsulfured for a while just to evolve. And then we go back to barrel and leave them in barrel, and we can make changes there where we can put in a bit more new oak or a bit less as we taste. And I love that part of my job, the tasting and the tweaking and definitely experimenting.
Delicious.
With different batches
and exciting too,
and deciding what goes to the estate and what goes to the reserve, like earmarked what we think is our best fruit. Is it really expressing as we expected it to be in the barrel? And that's exciting too.
It's exciting.
Like the big reveal.
And I'm sensing the excitement in your voice too. Yeah. But like, I get it. It's like, is this going to just be the amazing one that we're going to put away? Is this going to be, I love it.
So are you like looking at a particular area of the vineyard of, say, Pinot Noir and going, okay, I reckon that fruit's looking really good. So we're going to pop that area of fruit into this barrel and then another one and the other one. Then we're going to look at that as a reserve and that one as a potential estate. And then you test it. Is that what you're doing?
Yeah.
Or is it just choosing the fruit?
That's what we do. So in the vineyard where we can see now, right near the road, there are some of our oldest vines, and the Pinot comes from the Tasman Highway end and works its way along towards the cellar door.
Yeah.
And that sort of plot is where most of our premium fruit comes from for our reserve, you know. Mm. And we've got about, I think, 5 different clones just in that little section.
Right.
It's probably a hectare. So it's not huge. Yeah. We've got 26 hectares all up.
Yeah.
And we'll pay a bit more attention to the vines down there. So the guys will drop any green fruit that's sort of not ripening at the same rate as the rest. Or if we think there's a bit too much fruit in there, we might drop the old bunch and just take a bit more care. Not that we don't with the rest of the vineyard, but if you're going to spend time somewhere, you sort of spend it on your premium fruit first and then go elsewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. And is that you talking with the vineyard manager a lot and discussing that? Is that like
a strategy
that you
– Definitely. Yeah. And lots of driving around and looking, which is – the most amazing thing about having a winery on site as well, because I'm really connected to the vines. I'm not just making wine in a facility where the fruit's coming in and I don't see where it's coming from.
And also like living in the environment as well, like knowing the weather's doing this. So like,
exactly.
Like how's this going to impact like how we play out the week?
It's a, question. It's a lot of chatting back and forth with the vineyard manager and owner and, drives around the vineyard and tasting. This last year was nuts because everything seemed to ripen at once. So it's prioritizing.
Oh my goodness!
What comes off first, and because there's only so much fruit you can process in one day. So that was challenging.
When that period of time is happening as well, like it's obviously like intense. Like when it comes in, do you have to start processing it? You know, all those beautiful pictures you see of like, you know, hands and, you know, like giant vats of.
Yeah, are you like doing the Lucille Ball? I know. It's really like and jumping in and.
Absolutely. I actually am. I'm not even lying.
Are you seriously?
With some batches. We do jump in. So the premium reserve Pinot, we have a portion that's whole bunch fermented, which means it stays on its stalks and skins and everything.
Is that to develop like tannins and stuff like
that? Yeah, so it's different. It's a different tannin profile than you get from – so you get tannin from your seeds, your stalks and your skins.
Wow, I didn't even know all that. Yeah. So exciting.
Yeah.
So for those bunches to get the juice, you've got really got to jump in and stomp it.
Just use a press.
That's not good. That sounds amazing.
That's great.
Yeah. And then it just ferments as it is in the bins that we've picked too. Does that answer your question?
Yeah.
And because you also we're probably getting really techie, but is that like wine techie? But I'm sure our listeners would be interested. And I think there's like
– to appreciate the complexities in the craft and the creativity.
Yeah.
Just like in all of the different aspects of – the process.
Absolutely. Yeah. And also, like you spoke about something that you didn't, there was one barrel you didn't put sulfur in or something like that. Like, what's that all about? Or sulfur, I don't know.
So sulfur is going to preserve from oxidation and from any microbial activity. But there's, so some people might process a fruit, say ferment on skins to get colour from your reds and then press off into barrel. And at that point they might sulfur it up early in the piece. Honestly, it's kind of experimental for me, but I've worked with a couple of different methods with one winemaker that did sulfur things up early and the other one that sort of let things go for a while. So I left the estate Pinot and the reserve Pinot this year until now because I just I feel like it probably just wants to have some hangout time on lees without sulfur just to really get all the everything integrated and
Develop complexity.
Yeah, I feel like I'm sort of shutting it down when I'm adding sulfur. But I mean, that's this is the thing. There's no right or wrong way to make wine.
No,
I know some winemakers might listen to this and go, "Oh my god, that's scary as hell."
But you are so loose.
But there's plenty of winemakers that do it.
You and your creative process, and just you, like just listening to your own intuition about like what you know, based upon all the information and the feedback and just everything that you're living and seeing, and you know, this is how you want to roll.
But true. But like, I wouldn't take that risk if I didn't know that it works in the first place. Because
you've already
with a small batch.
Yeah.
I've finally got to a point where this is what I do. I start questioning myself and I'm like, oh, are they okay in barrel?
Right.
I don't know. Maybe I should rip them out now and do the blending and sulfur them up and put them back. So
and you'd wake up in the middle of the night and go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like 2 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
I think it's time.
Yeah. Eyes open.
I love it.
Okay.
It
really is. It is your studio. I'm sorry to keep making parallels between it, but it's just how I can sort of try and relate to that and the winemaking process.
Yeah.
Because it's a creative vision though.
It is.
And it's just like, okay.
And it constantly.
I've got to do something now. Yeah.
I'm constantly tasting. So I know like when things are starting to look quite, not quite as fresh, you know, I might go, oh, look, that batch is knitting. Attention.
I hope your mum and your aunties and stuff get to like visit you, and like I'm sure that after putting you in the back of the gobstopper, driving you around everywhere, I'm sure they're so proud of you.
We do keep mum in good supply, actually. Yeah, bless she's her. Happy.
Yeah.
I love it.
Are they in Tassie? They're in Tassie, aren't they?
Yeah, mum's down in Hobart.
Yeah,
my daughter, the one who
The big supporter.
Let's move up here. She lives down there during the week.
Yes.
She stayed at the same high school. They live just down in South Hobart.
Yeah.
She has a really good connection like I did with my nan, which is really sweet. It's funny how things work out.
Tell me about your nan.
My nan?
Yeah, I love
She was
stories.
The best. I loved her so much.
Yeah.
I miss her, but she was, you know, one of the ones that would be dragged along on these wine tours.
Yeah.
No, but I lived with her from – well, during the week, actually, when my parents were busy, I'd live with her at her place down at Taruna and my grandpa at the time. So I'd be living with them Monday to Friday, even in primary school. And then my pa since passed and she moved over to the Eastern Shore and I moved in with her for year 10, 11 and 12.
Yeah.
11
like
and 12.
College and, yeah.
Wow. So the benefit to me in this was that no one really knew how much trouble I was getting into because my nan thought I was perfect and I wouldn't do anything naughty. So she also was deaf, so she'd know I was going out. I'd always be honest and I'd go out and have a good time and then maybe get home at 1 o'clock in the morning and she'd be sound asleep and wouldn't even hear me get in.
Yeah.
And I must have reeked of alcohol and she'd come in the next morning with an orange juice and breakfast in bed and she would never ever mention
bless her.
That
she's a good nan.
Been up to no good.
Yeah.
She was great.
Yeah. She knew.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. But she was fun and she would be super proud. And I wish she could try my wine.
What was her name?
Betty.
Betty.
Yeah.
Bless.
You have to have a Betty vintage
I
one
should,
day.
Actually. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds
lots
good.
Lots of people actually that we're interviewing are talking about their nans and their, yeah, like mentors and stuff too, but also, yeah, mums and, yeah, yeah, dads and, yeah, like that's special, like grandparents and people in their corner and backing them.
Yeah.
The last lady we spoke to was talking about her child having the grandmother's name tattooed and, yeah, like, yeah, yeah, I love it.
Yeah.
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 I think, yeah, actually,
family,
strong role models like that, yeah, in your life are so important. And I think if my nan didn't grow up in her time, then she would have been a lot more out there. Like, she was into acting and whatnot, which was quite unusual for her vintage. But if I wanted to catch up with her later in life, she'd have a diary full and, you know, I'd have to pencil in a date. Of course she'd fit me in because I was a special one.
Yeah.
But I think if she grew up, you know, in these days, she would have been super fun and she would have had a career that was more inspiring, you know. Yeah. And I think that's how lucky we are in this day and age that we can do creative things in work and, you know, not settle for something just to earn money, but actually be inspired by our jobs.
Exactly. And also be a leader.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And what's that like, being, you know, taking on the leadership role in the winery?
It's scary sometimes, but I've only got a really small team. I'm really lucky. Mark, my assistant, is a really great guy and he stares me up all the time. So, you know, and I'll let him. But, you know.
Yeah. But you, like,
shut him down when I need to.
Yeah. Of course. Yes. Yeah. Talking to you, Mark. Yeah.
But no, I think that's the next part of my journey. I just recently got a scholarship to do a leadership, women in leadership course next month.
Yeah.
So it's funny you asked that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I'm sure I'll get heaps out of that, but I've never done any real training, so it's just I've always managed staff and looked after staff, but never actually done anything to progress with that. Hopefully I'm an okay boss.
People
keep coming back and wanting to do vintages again with me, so I can't be that bad.
Oh, no, but that's good. No, but you seem like, you're a really cool cat and, you know, laid back and stuff, and I think, you know, like
mostly.
You're authentic. Yeah, feel.
And look, we all have those moments of self-doubt and is this the right thing I'm doing? And I think leadership, and we've been told in so many different ways that you have to do, as a woman, leadership this way and pull up your pants this way and do it that way. And, you know, and I think it is like what you've been doing is perfectly fine. Yeah. And you do it your way. You just be
you. Just winging it. Well, that's the thing. I'm not trying to prove anything to anyone. Yeah. And I am who I am. And if you don't like me, then.
Yeah. Well, but, you know. And at the end of the day, you can see what the vision is and you can see what the goal is and you know what that vintage, well, potentially could be, because that's why you're there. You're doing all the risk assessing. You're doing all the thinking.
For sure. Yeah.
And
I think if you, I don't know, I've met a lot of people in my time that have sort of really pushed to get into these sort of positions and they're really quite fierce about it. And I just don't think it's necessary.
Yeah.
There's a lot of beautiful people as well.
I
just think those people in leadership that, you know, have really, really had to work to get there kind of still have something to prove. Mm. And it's kind of sad.
I
just got
enjoy
lucky.
Enjoy your life too.
Yeah.
No, that's hard. Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
Totally. I think we've covered off on so many things.
Yeah.
Any advice for, like, your younger self or?
Yeah, let's go some advice for your younger self.
Oh, younger self?
Or younger self.
I mean, you're pretty young as it is. She's pretty young as it is. So she's going to go back a couple of years.
It can even be, it doesn't even need to be younger self. It's just, like, advice for people that might be thinking about getting into wine or thinking about, like, horticulture, working out in the land, or, you know, like.
For sure. Yeah. I think I really am glad that I started my journey, as I mentioned before, in the vineyard and really understanding from the ground to the glass. has been great. Yeah. I know that sounds
no, I love that.
Well.
No, it's good. We'll put that on a put that on a slide in Instagram.
Yeah. From the ground to the glass. With Jackie Dong.
Yeah, we're gonna do it.
You just did your own voiceover. I love it. Yeah.
I think I interrupted you. Do it again.
Yeah, no.
Not doing it again.
That's right.
That's it. You get that once. So starting in the vineyard, or even if you can't start there, at least spending time in the vineyard and tasting the fruit, it's just so important to get yourself out there and understanding how the grapes, the flavours in the vineyard relate to the wine.
Mm.
I think, and on that, just always tasting. We do lots of, we did in the past with our kids, we'd, you know, do blindfolded tastings at the table where, you know, it's like, what's this spice or what's mm-hmm. that fruit? And,
oh, cute.
And doing that or just in the supermarket, picking up something and smelling it is, don't worry about looking like a weirdo.
Yeah.
Just do it. Always, like, the sensory thing is really important.
Yeah.
And if there's opportunities for tastings, just make sure you get involved and do as much tasting as you can in tasting groups or whatever it be in the winery itself as well. If you get the opportunity to work a vintage, just take every opportunity to taste, ask questions, just keep learning. Mm-hmm. And I think on the keep learning, it just, that's what I love about my job, is that I'm never going to stop learning, and I just love that.
Yeah, it's just you've got that curiosity and that just that internal fascination and drive of just, it's just going to keep evolving. And, you know, like, you don't necessarily know what it's going to taste like necessarily, but you've got the vision.
Yeah, so. And I'm excited for moving forward. Like, my palate's going to change and the wines are probably going to change with me, and that's part of the beauty of making wine as well.
I know.
Oh, that's nice too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
And as I learn new things, I'll try different methods. And it's just always evolving.
Yeah.
Hopefully I will be too, because otherwise we all get boring.
We do. It's a whole art. It's an art form.
That was amazing.
It really is.
Yeah.
Well, Jackie, that was amazing.
That was amazing.
Someone who was a bit shy, you've actually nailed it.
Oh, I don't know about
you
that.
You have. Is there anything else you wanted to say at the moment that we haven't
mentioned? I think so. I think you asked me about vintage as well before, and I didn't answer the question. I got sidetracked.
I can't remember.
About that time when all the fruit comes in and whatever. Like, I just love that time so much. It's best.
Like,
it's hectic. It is like Christmas, and Christmas actually stresses me out more, probably. But, you know, it's a stressful time.
Yeah.
But it's a time where everyone's sort of working together, and if you've got a really good team, everything flows, and it's just fun. And you're like, we're doing this. We're in this together. We might be doing,
it's like the fruits coming in, and now, like, now we're going to execute the dream.
Absolutely. Now's
shows
the time.
On. Shows on. Yeah.
And I love it when it's the fruits coming in, and you're just energy. Getting amongst it. There's so much.
And there's the
smell. You're losing energy because you're working like 12 to 14 hours a day.
Yeah.
There is a smell of the grapes and the smell of the ferments and all the esters in the air. It's just beautiful.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good time. But in saying that, it's exhausting.
Sure.
Yeah.
And I think I love it so much because you can see an end point. Mm. It's, you know, you're doing these crazy shifts, but it's all worth it because.
But like, you're working all year for that time too.
Or after it to get it all in bottle.
Yeah.
So, vintage is great.
Yeah.
I love it. It's so good.
I think that's amazing.
Jackie Dolan.
thank you so much
for being on the Creative Rumble.
Yeah.
Nadia and I are very pleased to have you, and thank you for hosting us today on the Milton Vineyard. We're going to take some photos of you now.
Yeah.
Oh, great. I can't wait. Love photos.
thank you. And we're going to, you know, put some show notes and get some links to you.
Okay. Let's do it.
Okay, great. Okay, let's do it.
Yeah.
From the ground to the bottle.
Yeah.
With Jackie Dong.
I love it.
She did it.
Yeah.
Thank you. Hey listeners, we hope you're enjoying the Creative Rumble podcast.
If you're loving the content, why not share the podcast with someone who could use some creative inspiration?
We'd also love to hear from you. Drop us a note via our website or Instagram. Your feedback and stories make this podcast even better.
And if you want to support us further, get online to our website and click on the Buy Us a Coffee link. Your donation keeps the Creative Rumble alive.
You can find all the links in the show notes. Thank you for being a part of our creative community.
Until next time, keep rumbling.